Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with Mike Salmon, who is one of the curators of the Venice Immersive Worlds Gallery. He does a surveying and gathers up like 800 worlds, and he presents it to Liz and Michelle, who make the final curatorial decisions. And so he's a bit of a first cut of exploring the frontiers of virtual culture within VRChat and being able to highlight it here each and every year. Mike is categorizing these worlds into like the art worlds as well as the music worlds. And those are the two main categories. And yeah, I also had a chance to see all the worlds and then just kind of chat through each of the different experiences that I had with Mike and kind of unpack some of the different themes that he saw. Interestingly enough, this was like a conversation that I had with Mike talking about the work of Dr. Morrow. And it was kind of after this conversation that I decided to reach out to Dr. Morrow and do a whole extended interview over text to be able to dig in more into his whole corpus of works that he's doing. He's basically one of my favorite VR chat creators or basically immersive creators, full stop. I mean, he's like an incredible visual storytelling and just totally transportive worlds that take 4 or 5 hours to get through. So if you haven't seen Dr. Morrow's work, definitely go check it out. I'll put a link into the show notes to the interview that I did with him. And there's also a number of different interviews of different pieces that I also saw at Raindance last year that also were featured and had some conversations about. So I'll also put some links in the show notes there to some of these other conversations if you want to dig in. But these worlds are all basically all available, except for some of the different ones from Sony, because there are some performances that are not widely available. But for the most part, you can go into the Venice world for VRChat and to see all these various worlds and see the frontiers of world building. This is definitely, in terms of the center of gravity, it's mostly all Earth element in terms of the world building, because everything is centered around the world and exploring the world. So it's almost singular in that sense, where it doesn't always necessarily have other elements as strong, except for, I'd say, the music world, which is much more the water element in terms of ways that you can see all the different types of amazing visualizations and other spatial storytelling that's happening within the context of these music experiences within VRChat. Some pretty incredible work that's happening here. And so definitely worth checking out. And, you know, like I said, some of these different performances only happen in a way that you have to kind of see it when they happen, or during Venice Immersive, during the actual tours, they also will show some of these as well. So looking forward to digging into this year's crop of pieces leading up to this year's Venice Immersive, which is coming up here in just like less than a month away now. So covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Mike happened on Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, I'm Mike Salmon, and I am running the Best of Worlds section here at Venice Immersive. So this year, that is 23 productions that have all been made inside VRChat.
Great. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah, so I used to work at Universal Pictures many moons ago, and they set up an innovation team there. My job was to go out, find interesting technologies and startups to work with, and then see whether the business might be able to adopt those technologies. And that's where I came across the DK1, and I just got totally obsessed, much to the annoyance of all the people who worked around me. I stopped looking at any other technologies and just dived right into VR.
Great. So I always love coming to Venice Immersive, and it's usually around Raindance. And so Raindance is my opportunity to catch up on all things VRChat. And then Venice is usually right around the same time. And so there's the Immersive Worlds Gallery, which is a selection of lots of different worlds and, yeah, just a great cross-section of what's happening in the virtual culture on VRChat. So you do a great job of scouting it out and then present those worlds to Liz and Michelle, who make the final decision. But maybe you could just give a bit of a overview, or at least some of the trends that you're seeing, and where do you want to start when starting to dive into this year's selection?
Yeah, sure. So that selection process is quite an interesting process. So I spend a lot of time following lots of virtual photographers. That's a big scene in VRChat, people making really beautiful photos in worlds. And I'm obviously connected with a lot of the world builders. So I spend a lot of time scouring VRChat for work. So this year, my spreadsheet of worlds that I looked at was over 700. So then that gets scaled down to between 50 and 80 that Liz and Michelle look at during the festival selection process, and then they finally decide what's going to go into the festival. And we never have any like hard and fast rules about exactly what's going to go in and what's not. I usually just say it needs to be something that's culturally interesting. I think, you know, it's not often that Hangout Worlds make it to VR Chat, although we do have a couple this year. But I think there are two sort of quite clear themes that are running through this year, and that is art and music. And I'm quite obsessed with music, so it's not a surprise that there are lots of music worlds that make it.
Great. So where do you want to begin on this year's program?
So if we're talking about art, it makes sense to talk about what is virtual art, which is a really extraordinary exhibition with four exhibits inside. It was made by Jessing Hung, and it shows four different creators' works, and they look at shadow play, theatrical scenery, pop-up books, and collage. But they do it in an incredibly immersive and like VR-first way, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, Justin also did a previous program for the Virtual Museum of Virtual Art, and it was showing 3D calligraphy, and it was a real beautiful exhibition, which actually won Rand Dance a number of years ago, and I had a chance to actually talk to Justin about this year's program, and I think it's just a very incredible example of exhibiting virtual art and kind of pushing the frontiers of how to do virtual exhibitions. And yeah, just a really great kind of virtual architecture that ties it all together.
Yeah, just a very good job of tying a gallery experience, something that you would recognize from the physical world, with elements that can only be done in VR, things that you trigger, things that have moments of sort of slight interactivity. So you really feel like they're making the most of the medium.
And so what else went on the context of art?
So I'm a real sucker for particles. And so there's a lovely piece called Light Aquarium by Phi16. It's a very simple world, and it's there to experiment with a new prefab VRC light volumes. Now, I'm not a tech geek, so I don't totally understand how that all works, but it does a really great job of allowing light to radiate and to reflect off items. And so the simple thing is you literally just pick up a globe, it has particle trails on it, and you can paint and dance in the music. But then there's also like a little hidden stopwatch, so you can make these amazing particle light sculptures and then stop time and stop to take photos. And I really enjoy that sort of level of interactivity with it all.
Yeah, I notice in that world, it's nice to go in with someone else because you can't always see the particles behind you when you're jumping around. But when you see someone else jump and fly through the air, you can really get a sense of the majesty of seeing the lights radiating and reflecting. So yeah, really short and simple, but beautiful piece.
Yeah, and it's quite a sort of meditative piece as well.
Yeah, and then what else?
So we also have a piece called Powder Game. That's by Pema Maling, and it's based on Dan Ball's web game, the same name. And again, it's kind of simple in its exhibition. It's a single screen, which is a touch screen, but then you can choose various elements that you can kind of paint with on the screen. And so if you put stone and you put a plant on top of the stone, then it sits there. But then if you put rain on it, then the plants will grow. But then you can also spend a bunch of time making this beautiful scenery and then add in C4 and acid and completely explode the place with mad chemical reactions. So it creates an entire simulation from what you're placing into the world. And like I say, it's a screen in a world, but I've spent quite a lot of time like making these beautiful spaces and then kind of destroying them in a flash of particles.
Yeah, like a sand painting of sorts, but you also can jump through it and have multiple people there working on it as well.
Yeah, and then we also have Nature's Queendom by Durs and Starhart. So Durs has had a really like beautiful avatar that he's worn since I've known him, and he's essentially made a world which is like a homage to that avatar, which is super bright and psychedelic with sort of neon elements, But it's just this sort of really magical journey through this sort of interpretation of this avatar. And when you put the avatar on, it has an insane number of customizations. So you can change almost every element of it and really make it your own.
Yeah, and when I did the tour at Raindance, everybody was wearing that same avatar, and it was amazing to see all the variations, but still be the, kind of the same avatar. And yeah, it was actually one of the winners of the Raindance this year for best art, the best art world. And yeah, just a really vast open brush world that has a lot of amazing music from Starheart as you go around as well. And I had a chance to talk to both of them in a conversation after Raindance, so you could check that out as well. So yeah, what else do we have for art?
Yeah, so I'm not sure whether this totally fits in this category, but for me it does, is we have Ritual by Dr. Morrow. Because to me, his work feels like exploring a painting. You know, it doesn't have a traditional storyline. It doesn't have like moments of interactivity or any game mechanics. It's all about exploring what is essentially almost like a gallery space, but it's like this kind of Soviet, really bizarre world. And it's we have him here whenever we can. There was a moment at the end of the last festival when I asked him when he was going to have his next work completed, and he told me that he was taking a break from working in VRChat. Then I was very upset. So it's really great to see that he's returning with one of his most accomplished pieces. But it's spread over 5 different chapters. I don't know how he managed to get them all in the same world. So for the first time that I did it, because I know his work, he hides things. I go back to his previous works and quite often find whole sections that I hadn't visited before. So it took me 4.5 hours to complete the piece. And still, when I came back to do the tour guide routes for the festival, I was still discovering new things that I hadn't found before. So I really appreciate the sort of vastness of his worlds.
Yeah, I happened to be world hopping in VRChat, and Fens joined me, and I said, oh, let's go to Ritual. And Fens then proceeded to give me and Felicity like a 3.5-hour tuned experience trying to hit everything that he has explored it for like dozens of hours now, and multiple sessions and guided tours. So I felt real privileged to get a guided tour from Fens showing me all the highlights of hidden rooms and paths. But yeah, it took us like 3.5 hours, maybe up to 4 hours. And so a bit of a challenge here at the festival context to try to like show that in the context of an hour slot. So at least you have 2 slots where you're trying to at least address some of the different chapters, but it's really quite impossible to give the full experience of Dr. Morrow's The Ritual in this kind of festival context.
Yeah, that's right. There was a moment where I was almost considering putting on 5 individual slots to do each one, or like having a set of headsets that were just doing Ritual all day. But that wouldn't really fly for the way that we work at the festival. So yes, we have 2 45-minute slots, and we just try and get through as much as we can. And it's also one of the most difficult things for our tour guides, right? So we have these, the way that we do it in Venice is we have people from the VRChat community. So that's Octoplex, Shells, Nina V2, Joshix, and Drusia. And Drew, he knows I always get his name wrong, Drusiton. And, you know, they meet the folks who are here in Venice inside VRChat, and then they take them on a tour around the world. But Ritual is incredibly difficult to show because you only have to go around the wrong corner once and someone's lost and you don't find them again. So they're always so smart, and they come up with ways of making the tours work. Because we're a film festival, we have many people coming over from the main film festival who don't know VRChat. In fact, sometimes it's their first time in VR, and it's like a baptism of fire jumping into VRChat for the first time. So they do things like they'll have an avatar that has a particle system that draws a line. So that line stays in the world. So if someone gets completely lost, as long as they can find that line, they can catch up to the rest of the tour. So the guys are really smart at finding ways to show the work.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing about Dr. Morrow's work, just because it's so incredibly inspiring to see what he's doing. I think he's like a world-class and master world builder that every time I go into his world, it just sends me into this complete state of awe and wonder that you just, it's so surreal and unexpected, and you can explore. And so all those things added together just creates a unique experience that I really haven't seen in very many other contexts of any other work that I've seen across all of VR. So I'd highly recommend, if you get a chance to go check out Dr. Morrow's world, that you won't be disappointed in spending 3 or 4 or 5 hours exploring it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just mention a couple of other pieces on the side of the art side of things. We have a piece called Vent by Premium, which he describes as emo brutalism. So it's a fairly short experience. And this is one of the things that I also really love about working with the programming for VRChat, is that this is where people can just express what they want to make. I often refer to VRChat as the YouTube of VR, right? Because anyone can download a game engine and then they can build something and then they can put it out. And it doesn't need to be a massive game. It doesn't need to have a crew of professional developers, and it doesn't need to have funding from this, that, or the other institution. It's kind of like the punk bit of the festival. So, you know, he's made this really beautiful, explorable art piece, which has these really tight corridors that like give you real claustrophobia and then open up into these really beautiful environments. But this was a piece that he made in like 50 hours. So, you know, it's a big contrast to some of the pieces here where you sit and listen to Meet the Creators and they talk about how it's taken them 4 years to create their work. And then finally, we also have an exhibition Backseeing. So every year we have pieces, most years we end up showing a piece by Haruki Hara, and I'm really apologizing for my butchering of your name, but she always makes these really incredible little galleries, and they're galleries of usually 2D art that have some quirk about them, which kind of flips the artwork and makes you see it from a different perspective. And in this particular one, that is literally the case. So you see a piece and then you need to go round behind it to then see it from a different angle. She has a really playful, fun way of displaying that work, which we really enjoy.
Yeah, in the virtual market, also known as VKET, creators there have what they call the gimmicks of things that, you know, some trick or interactive component. And so gimmick can have other connotations. And so maybe I'm a little hesitant to refer to that as a general term, but there's like these unique novel twists that are in each of these different times. When you look around, you see it from a different angle, but there's some things that often you can only do in VR, this kind of change blindness or other ways that you're doing stuff that you can't normally do within physical reality. And so you have this kind of unique virtual exhibition that you walk through and you end up having this continual surprising or perversion of your expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other sort of theme that's running through is music. And we have two worlds that were commissioned by Sony Music Japan. So it's really exciting to see that VRChat is being used by big commercial record labels as a way to show work. And in fact, Yotorogi is, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to play favorites, but it's possibly my favorite VRChat world of all time. It's a music experience for an artist called Kikuo, and it's directed by Mika Bozu. And it just does this really, I love the fact that it mixes sort of exploration. So you walk through worlds in order to get to like a nightclub. And then when you start it off, it just launches into the most insane light show experience that I think I've really ever tried. In fact, it hit me so much that I ended up like going to see Kikuo in concert in London, bought a t-shirt. So, you know, it's working for Sony Music. But, you know, there are moments where you're in a club and you have like these really intense sort of light show, but then a big door appears, it explodes open, and you are on a moving panel, and you go through these really intricate, like awe-inspiring spaces. But the music is just ramps up and gets more and more intense and crazy. And then at the end, because it's got so intense, everything goes white, and then you're put on a nice desert island so that you can kind of decompress afterwards, which a lot of people really need to do.
Yeah, I've seen a number of different music shows within VRChat, and it's really distinctly different than, say, going to something like the Sphere or Cosm, these dome-like experiences where you might have a screen when you feel very immersed, but it's in like the far distant horizon. And so it's like if you were to be in VR chat and watch something that's purely in the skybox, that's kind of like what it's like for Cosm and the Sphere, because you don't really have much depth reception for anything that's happening. And so I think some of these experiences that I noticed this year with the music, that they're really filling up the full space and giving you this real sense of depth. And, you know, if you were to do it in physical reality, you'd have to have like a whole hologram machine to really replicate it, because it's really difficult to give this kind of like a 3D screen effect. And so having something that would be in an augmented reality or mixed reality, or especially in VR, really starting to play with depth in a way that is really unique, that I really haven't seen in any other context.
And it's also really special being a shared experience. You know, we've had sort of music-based experiences here at Venice before that are really incredible pieces. And I'm usually always yearning for them to put them into VR chat, because that moment when you're in a crowd and you're sharing those holy shit moments and whooping and hollering and screaming and shouting in surprise as something happens, you know, that human connection is something that now, you know, I find that I really hanker after whenever doing any sort of VR experience now.
Yeah, and before we go into the other Sony experience, maybe you could just give a bit more context for how you heard about some of these exhibitions, for how Sony was showing it, because these Sony pieces are not readily available. It's difficult for you to see them. You have the links that you're able to show them at Venice, but they're not widely available just yet. And so just curious how you heard about it and what some of the reactions were from the VRChat community, and if you heard any feedback for how Sony thought how it went.
Yeah, so basically, if we're with Yotorogi, my inbox was flooded, because anyone who knows the sort of music I'm into and the sort of weird and wonderful things that float my boat, like, everyone was saying, Mike, you've really got to see this. This is right up your street. And they were absolutely right. So, you know, the tour guides and lots of the other world builders were sort of flooding me with recommendations for that. And for the other show that we have, which is Fuzumuzu 0.0, so Fuzumuzu is FZMZ. So that is a concert by a band that is not quite a virtual band, not quite a real band, kind of both, kind of. They are, I would say, kind of like the Gorillas of the sort of VR space. So that was a world that I had seen on VR chat. Anyone can go to it, but it's there as almost like a shrine to the band, right? You can watch videos, you can see information about them. They've got their avatars, there are statues that you can play with. But it's a friend of mine, Katsutoshi. He often sends me lists of the things that I should check out from Japan, maybe things that I might miss from my usual walks through VR chat. And so from his list, that was one of the ones that really, really stuck out. Mm.
And that's also one that has replayable elements that are not widely available. So how, if people do want to see the full version, how do they do that, aside from coming to Venice, which is going to be over by the time this airs?
Yeah, so they put on shows. They call them guerrilla shows. So, you know, they're like pop-up shows. So the best suggestion is to find them on social media and then just watch out for when they next do a guerrilla show.
Yeah, because if you go to the world, it's going to be a little bit of a letdown, because, you know, you're not seeing all the live performative aspects that you're describing. So, yeah, because when I went there, I was like, really, is this it? And then happy to find out that there is much more that I got to see here on that trip. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye out on that.
Yeah, so one of the others we have is Uncanny Lounge, which is a new work that debuted just at the festival. So this is a collaboration between Screaming Colour, who's made the Gumball Lounge, and Metaric, who makes Uncanny Alley. So together they've made the Uncanny Lounge. They also worked together on a piece that we had here last year, which is the Uncanny Alley First Day, which was a big piece of the Immersive Theatre. So they are both like really great world builders, but their collaboration is kind of strange in a way, because Screaming Colour deals in primary colours and neon and music and brightness, and Metaric deals with dirgy, dark, like cyberpunky type environments. So on paper, that collaboration probably shouldn't work, but actually those things complement each other really well. So you're walking through Rick's kind of dystopian landscapes. So Screaming Colour started as a musician who used VR chat as a way to sort of display his music. And now in this piece, you get to play along. So he's built a whole system for the ability to sort of trigger samples, but everything fits in time with the music. So as you're playing along, you're essentially sort of playing to somewhat of a backing track. And then you have like three different scenes in different spaces and all complete with animations. And it wouldn't be a Screaming Colour world without like a big psychedelic crescendo at the end.
Yeah, and I had a chance to get a preview ahead of the festival, and then I saw it here with the more final build. And, you know, one of the things that they were saying is that they really wanted to create this collaborative music jamming experience, which I'd seen previously attempted, and it can often devolve into a cacophony of latency and things that are not synced up. But having the sequencer approach where it's gated in a quantized way that when you hit, then it still finds the beat, but also changes the chord structure so that it still sounds good. I think it's a really much more elaborate, sophisticated way of trying to get some constraints on this collaborative music generation process, and reminded me a lot of the Electronauts, which was a game that allowed you to kind of be a DJ and play around. And this is sort of a similar type of idea, but Electronauts is a single player and this is for multiplayer, how to create like a collaborative music generation process. And yeah, having like three different stages that you go through, and there's kind of a nice progression as you go through this world, and also having more ability to kind of remix and do more sophisticated things with the sound. So yeah, kind of a really fun collaborative world that was really focused on collaborative music generation, which is a hard problem to solve. And I think they did a really great job of trying to address that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we also have a sort of visualizer world by Juice. So Juice is also one of the creators of Magnetize, which is another one of the worlds that is high up on my to show folks list. And I'm a real, real sucker for visualizers. I was super into all of the Windows-based things back in the day. One of the things that I really like about his world was the fact that you have this massive, great big menu, and you can just get in and you can dial everything exactly how you want it. You can noodle about. Also, one of the things, you know, that happened to us for the festival is the like YouTube updated something, which meant that suddenly from nowhere, like we couldn't get it to work. And this is one of the great things about the VR chat community is that, you know, there's a backup. So we could go to VR CDN and they have a VOD function. And so we were able to put some music into the VR CDN system and that fixed everything for us. But, you know, that's not a system that was made by VR chat. That's made by the community and used by the community.
Is that called Neuron?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, that is kind of like you're jumping in and there's like TV screens and having like audio reactive dynamic reactions to the music. And so I don't know if it's using Audio Link, but that's a popular thing that kind of translates audio coming in and then spreads it out and creates a full, you know, throbbing of the music in a way that also has a TV screen set around that you can actually see the original video, but have the whole world kind of radiate with different pulses that's reacting to the audio. So yeah, kind of a good place to go kind of chill out to music and listen to for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. So then another world, it's not music, but another world that I really rate highly is Scale Journey. That is, I don't know if you know the old video Powers of 10.
Yeah.
So that's a video that, you know, jumps magnification and pulls the camera back by scales of 10 each time. It's a really great old film. This is like the VR version of that. So you start the world by walking out onto a leaf, and as you continue walking, you get down into its sort of cell structure and its DNA, and slowly by slowly you get down to the atoms, and then inside the atoms you get down to the sort of the quarks, and it all starts getting really kind of weird. And then you think that's kind of it, and then you walk backwards, and you continue walking, and you go back through up to the leaf. You then go above the forest, and you then start going up, and you see the globe. And as you start going back and back, you start seeing the solar systems and then galaxies, and you start going out to the edge of the universe. And it is one of those, I don't know, it's one of those worlds where at the end of it, I'm feeling like slightly lightheaded. It was a really sort of beautiful and educational piece of work.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites from this year's selection, just because scale is such a powerful effect that you get in VR, and to be able to transverse scale so seamlessly. And there is a wayfinding system where it kind of shows you where to go and how to get back. And it took a little bit to know exactly how to navigate that. But once I got the hang of it to go up, I actually missed going down first. I went up and then back down. And then by the time I was coming back down, it was easier to go down all the way back down to the lowest level. But yeah, very much reminded me of the Powers of 10 and gave me this experience that, that film is such a powerful film, but to actually have an embodied 3D version of it, it's like a whole nother level that I think it's unlike anything I've seen in VR. And although I guess Fuchsius did the first version of Neos, which is actually a part of a game jam, he did something very similar. So I have seen some things like that, but that was more of an animated thing. And this is more of using your agency of locomotion. So you're actually just locomoting through the scales, which was a lot different than seeing more of a cinematic take that Fuchsius did before. But yeah, it's just a super powerful concept and idea.
And then we have the counterpoint to Scale Journey and it being set on science. And what we have is Nico's Flat Earth, which is a recreation of the Earth as the flat earthers believe that exists. And so, as you can imagine, it's like a sort of tabletop that you're running around on. There's some fun little Easter eggs. If you shrink yourself down really tiny and you go around the world, you can hear music or radio pieces going on around the world. But the idea of the piece is for you to then step off the Earth. And as you step off the Earth, then you have this sort of disembodied kind of existence. You can float out into space. And as you push further back, you can see the Earth there in its flat form with this energy surrounding it. But as you go further and further back and you start going through the stars, you're confronted by a deity. You're confronted by the Flying Spaghetti Monster, who is the god of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, which I first came across reading Richard Dawkins. And so the Flying Spaghetti Monster's there in its giant form. And if you know where to look and you go through underneath one of his meatballs, you can go deep inside the meatball. And there's an altar that you go to, and then you can change into the Flying Spaghetti Monster avatar. And then as you go out of that, you can then go further, further, further back, and the world starts just to glitch out, and you realize that you're actually in some sort of Matrix-like environment.
It's a really fun and humorous piece. Comedy is hard to do in VR, yeah. But I thought this piece did a great job of doing that from a world-building perspective, but also I had a chance to watch the trailer today, which is also a lot of fun with kind of a Trump impersonator talking around, let's make the flat Earth great again.
Yeah. The trailer is really a piece of art in itself. Yeah, and then we also are showing our first ever flat piece of content in their selection. So we're showing Joe Hunting's The Reality of Hope. But because it's Venice, we don't do things normally. We're showing it inside the Ferality world in which the film was, or parts of the film were originally screened. So the film's a really touching piece about one of the members of the furry community who has a kidney disease and requires a donor and finds that donor in his furry community. And they track the moments where they come together to then have that moment where they have the operation and it's given the kidney. And it's one of the things, I always find it really interesting discussing VR chat with non-VR chat folks, because they kind of have this idea that in some way it's not real, right? That the people that you meet in VR are not, I don't know, almost like not real people. The relationships that you have inside these places aren't real in some way. And it's not about real and not real. It's about physical and digital. You know, I have many people that I know very well that I've only spoken to on Zoom calls or via email, but people don't think that those relationships are somehow lesser. Whereas if I have a relationship with someone in VR chat who happens to present themselves as a giant robot, or in my case, a big bunny, they seem to feel that, that somehow that relationship is somehow lesser or different. And I think this piece really shows the power and strength of those relationships that people form in these platforms and just how real they are. And that's something that Joe does incredibly well.
Yeah, I had a chance to see it ahead of Sundance this year because it was at Sundance where it premiered, and I did an interview with him. And yeah, it's a really touching story. And also photographer Arter, the person who donated his kidney, was kind of creating a video blog along the way and giving lots of different dispatches. And so, yeah, it was also interesting to kind of dive into some of that other source material to see a little bit more from his perspective, this journey. But yeah, I think Joe does a great job of poetically capturing the essence of the story that you can watch in the short film, which is also available on Documentary Plus. And I think it also appeared like in the New Yorker or so. Yes. That New Yorker picked it up and was on YouTube. So you can check out the video. But yeah, during Rain Dance, there's a number of different screenings within the VFI, the Virtual Film Institute. So it's after the BFI in Britain, but I don't know, is that where you showed it or is it in other worlds?
No, we showed it in one of the Ferality built worlds. So, you know, when the film opens and it's speaking to camera, the environment that's in the background is that Ferality world where we're showing the film.
Oh, very cool. Awesome. Did we go through everything or is there more?
Yeah, so there's a couple more. So we also have The Colony, Flat 804. So that's a really nice piece, which is... it's a flat which is, it's in a space where it looks like the world has ended, you know, and it's showing sort of how people are living after some terrible apocalyptic event. And in a strictest form, I would probably say that it was kind of a hangout world, but it's so incredibly well made and beautiful that it was definitely something that we wanted to show.
Yeah, there's like trees growing on the buildings that are there. There's like flooded water at the bottom of the city, and then you can kind of explore around this what feels like a Burning Man camp of sorts, where there's lots of different makeshift home and very well decorated. And yeah, you just kind of explore around their home that is in this post-apocalyptic context. So yeah, but there's some other like cyberpunk-y type of futuristic worlds, like Cyberlove. Is that one, another one?
Yes, absolutely. So Artsy Glitch does these incredibly detailed environments where it's like being in a piece of sort of Japanese cyberpunk. And it's just like the level of detail that they're able to put into these worlds is really, really incredible. So we really love showing her stuff.
And that's where you kind of go in and... it feels like another kind of cozy world, but science fiction. And it was interesting watching the trailer because there was like, oh, well, this is like the whole backstory to this world. I'm not sure if I got all of like the full context of what the world was or the context when I was in the world, but just got the sense of like I was being transported into like a science fiction future of sorts.
Yeah, and all of this has a massive catalog of worlds, and there is a lore that sort of runs through them all.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, it helped to watch the trailer for part of Venice because I was starting to get introduced to a bit more of that lore. So, yeah.
Great. And then another piece I really like, and again, more in the kind of in the sort of hangout space, is the Shinomi balloon. So this is a hot air balloon, which is this really fantastical space. We start off in the basket, and as you walk through, you can get up sort of into the balloon. But inside the balloon is this whole space with candles, and it's just really beautiful and atmospheric. But then you can fly, and you can fly inside the balloon, get outside, and then, yeah, you just have this really sort of cinematic experience. And then at the end, you can pick up a paper airplane and sort of zip around the world. So it's a really lovely place to go and spend time.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Just kind of felt like a little clockwork world that you're kind of exploring around. And yeah, I enjoyed kind of flying around at the end. And yeah, it felt like this kind of unique place to go hang out. I guess you can only do that in VR chat. I mean, I guess you could go hang out in a hot air balloon, but not how many people actually go do that, right?
Right. And you know, like, we've got to remember that the type of content that we usually show here is definitely like a subset of the work that is made in VR chat, because the primary use case of VR chat is in the name, right? It's chatting and it's people hanging out. So a lot of the worlds are these spaces that people make in order to go and hang out and have these conversations. And so, you know, we're usually looking for something which has, you know, maybe a bit of a story or, like I say, some sort of cultural interest beyond just the space in itself. But sometimes they're so sort of overwhelmingly great that we take them anyway.
Nice. Did we manage to get through all of them?
Yeah.
Nice. And so what's your concluding thoughts in terms of the what the reactions are this year at Venice and, you know, kind of what people are thinking about kind of this little taster of what's happening in the bleeding edge of virtual culture and VR chat?
Yeah, so I think this happens every year. I have the what I jokingly like to refer to as the traditional VR creators, you know, and they're always really blown away by what is possible on the platform. I think a lot of people are obviously used to seeing more sort of basic social experiences. They might be used to seeing like their Horizon home space or them seeing their kids playing Roblox or Rec Room. So when they see something like a piece by Dr. Morrow, like their minds open as to what the possibilities are. And then when I tell them that if you look on the app, you can see that there's often 100,000 people concurrently using VR chat at any one time, or that, you know, some of Nico's worlds have had over 9 million views, or that there's Avatar worlds that have got what looks like a billion views, then there's a lot of people whose eyes open very wide. So I think if you want to hit an audience, then VR chat is a very interesting place to work content. It's also a great place to experiment with ideas. I think the creator economy is something that is being rolled out. And I think when we get to a point where you can buy tickets so that people can put on events and they can monetize those events in a way that we're used to doing in the physical world, then I think that will probably be the start of a tipping point towards more creators in the traditional VR space starting to experiment with working in platforms like VRChat.
Yeah, and I think it's that economic aspect that reminds me of how when YouTube launched, they didn't really have monetization for a number of years into the future. And we're sort of in a similar place where VR chat is like maybe half monetized or a quarter monetized in the sense of like where it could go in the future. It's not really fully turned on quite yet. And, you know, and some people, when they think about the monetization and the share, that it ends up being around a 50-50 split a lot of times in terms of like tickets and money. And 30% of that is often going to the platforms themselves in terms of like Steam or Meta or Apple, you know, at some point, and Google. So you have like these distributors that the payment systems that are taking like a pretty large cut. But oftentimes location-based entertainment experiences have operation costs that also are like at a 50-50 split. So it isn't that different than, say, what we see on the LBE market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if I could put a petition out to try and reduce that 30% pound of flesh that the platform owners take, because it makes it almost impossible for creators to be able to really make the amount of money that they should be able to, I think. So,
yeah. Yeah, and just in terms of as you've been going out and seeing these different experiences here at Venice, you know, there's a number of times that I've heard you say, oh, this could be a VR chat world. So I think there's a certain way that when people premiere things here that they have aspirations to do location-based entertainment, but they can't always. And so it's sort of like you said, the YouTube of VR, like a lot of filmmakers would prefer to do like a theatrical release, but if nothing else, then they could put it on YouTube. But oftentimes the monetization strategy makes more sense for them to hold out and do more of an LBE approach because they can actually make it viable financially. But yeah, if that fails, then there could be like a backup for at least getting it out and for the world to see some of these different experiences. Because yeah, there are a number of experiences that are here at Venice that could potentially be translated into a VR chat context to open it up into a multiplayer context, but also to have a lot more people be able to see some of the work that's shown here at Venice.
So one of the things, so we make a Venice World every year. So if you search Venice 2025 in VR chat, you'll be able to find our Venice World made by a friend of mine, Deke Online, part of the Metaverse crew. So in that world, you'll be able to find portals to the majority of the work that's shown. We weren't able to show the reality of Hope as the full movie. So one of the things that we worked with Joe on was looking at creating a world as a way of driving people to the main experience. So as part of the movie, there is a transition scene where they move between the real and the virtual. And to do that, they made a scan of the dialysis room. So in order to have a portal in the Venice world, what they created really nicely is a world that has that scan in there. It also has like the trailer and it has like audio clips from the piece. So I think there's something really interesting there about what is what you could see as an ad or you could see as like the Blu-ray extras, depending on your point of view. But I think it's a really nice way of creating something to put into the VRChat community, even though the piece itself isn't a VRChat world.
Yeah, and we also see a lot of that happening in, say, the virtual market and other ways that we've seen ways to create virtual worlds to kind of promote other things that are happening that they may have to go outside of there to get access to. So yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think the ultimate potential of VR and what's happening in social VR spaces might be and what it might be able to enable.
Well, I think that the clear thing from Venice this year is that LBE is the piece. It's the form that is allowing people to get out there and actually tour and show work and potentially make money from it. And the reason why I think that works so well is partly because of throughput, you know, being able to get quite a few people through, but it's also because it's human connection. And that is what these social VR platforms are for. It's human connection. So I think people experimenting with new ways of creating content that is all about social first and about how you bring people together to spend time together and enjoy content together, I think is really the future of what we're doing.
Great. Is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
No.
Any final? No final thoughts?
Final thoughts. So I guess what I would say is what we're doing in these spaces, it's still kind of experimental, especially in the context of the other work that's gone before. But you need to see it. And it's a really good idea, if you're going to go and see it, to have some form of curation. A lot of people go into VR chat for the first time, go into a public world and get a little bit scared off because like any social media platform, you can't completely control how people use it. So my suggestion, if you are interested in checking out what is possible on these platforms, is get a few friends together and go to the Venice World and use that as your jumping off point, because there you have a curated selection of content to see, but then you also have links to all of our previous editions, so you can go back and see all the works that we've shown over the last 5 years.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks so much again for joining me here on the podcast to give a bit of a guided tour through this year's selection of the VR chat worlds. And I always love going through and checking out as many as I can ahead of Venice because it's, you know, hard for me to see them while on site. But I know that the guided tour aspect and seeing it at Venice can be a unique experience because it is a bonding experience to be able to share time with strangers and to make connections. And I know that even from my world hopping on my own, having some other people that were going to be here at Venice this year joined in, and then Fins gave me this whole epic tour. So it can really just facilitate these deeper connections with people. And it's a lot of fun to go on a world hop with other folks and to create a whole experience out of it. So yeah, just really appreciate all the work that you've done to cast a wide net from 700 experiences, winnow it down to 80 to 90 and then have Liz and Michelle make the final call for the 23 experiences that are being featured this year at Venice. And yeah, always a pleasure to dive in and check them out and to unpack it all with you here at Venice. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast.
Thank you. And a shout out to the tour guides. Thank you for your hard work.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so I really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.